Next up on Off Duty, a celebrity and a chef, not necessarily in that order.
Helping you enjoy the finer points of food and drink. This is Off Duty from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello, and welcome to the Off Duty podcast, where we talk about eating and cooking and all of that sort of thing. I'm Beth Cracklauer, and today we're talking to someone many of you will know from Top Chef Masters, Iron Chef America, The Celebrity Apprentice, to name just a few of the TV shows he's appeared on in the U.S., in addition to hosting a whole slew of other shows in the U.K. and his native Australia. But the thing is, he's first and foremost an actual practicing, classically trained chef and the owner of two very highly acclaimed Los Angeles restaurants, Maud and the brand new Gwen Butcher Shop and Restaurant. Welcome to the podcast, Curtis Stone.
Well, thank you very much. How you doing?
Great. I'm so happy you're here. And I hope you won't mind if we won't talk too much about your TV career today, because I feel like that's the part everybody already knows about.
Absolutely.
So both of your restaurants in Los Angeles have opened to, I mean, I can only call them like adoringly positive reviews. It's virtually impossible to get a table. Did you feel like, given the fact that people in this country anyway knew you as a celebrity before they knew you as a chef, that you really had to knock it out of the park with these two restaurants and kind of establish your cred or reestablish your cred as a chef?
Yeah, I think, you know, look, the old saying of chefs having egos is warranted. It's legit. And I'm no exception to that. You know, I suppose I spent my whole life working in Michelin-starred restaurants in Europe. And when I was in my 30s, I moved out here to America because I got an opportunity to host a TV show. And I sort of did that, and that sort of started a new chapter of my life. But, you know, first and foremost, I've always loved being in the kitchen and always, you know, been excited to get back to it. It just took me a little while being in LA and not knowing the lay of the land so well. So, you know, but yeah, for sure, it's an interesting process, I guess, when you sort of you go from everybody only knowing you because of the restaurant work you've done, and then no one knowing you for the restaurant work you've done. And, you know, maybe that was a little added pressure. I kind of like pressure. So when I decided to open a restaurant, I thought I'd better do a good job.
So first there was Maud, which opened a couple of years ago in Beverly Hills. Can you talk a little bit about how that restaurant works, the kind of food you're serving there, and why you decided to do it that way?
Well, I think whatever you think about a restaurant, you've got to think about where you are and what's special about it. And to me, Los Angeles has got such beautiful produce. It's, you know, the fruit and vegetables you can find in LA are just unbelievable. You know, I can be buying tomatoes from down towards San Diego, and in an hour direction inland, I can be buying carrots from the high desert where there's still frost on the ground at the same time that I'm buying these unbelievable tomatoes. So the microclimates out here are fantastic, and so is sort of the attitude of small young farmers that sort of flood the farmers markets in LA. So, you know, I thought that I'd do something around vegetables and around, I don't know, maybe farm to table had been done so much, and I think it's a lovely way to eat farm to table. You know, you basically go out and buy good ingredients and treat them really simply, and there you go. You know, you've got something tasty, and there's a lot of restaurants that practice that. I wanted to do something a bit different, I guess. I wanted to sort of flip that on its head and say, all right, well, let's take a fantastic ingredient but put it under a microscope and see just what we can do with it, and challenge myself as a chef to think of different applications to the same ingredient. So we decided to do sort of a 10-course, 12-course tasting menu that revolves around an ingredient. So each month we choose a different ingredient, and that becomes an element of every single course that we serve for that month.
Wow. And then just within the last couple of months, you kind of went in the other direction, a meatier direction, when you opened Gwen, which is a butcher shop as well as a restaurant. I understand this isn't the first time in your life you've worked in a butcher shop. Is that right?
Yeah, no, look, I grew up in Australia where we have butcher shops on every corner, I guess. And my first job was in a butcher shop. My brother's first job was in a butcher shop. And we've sort of always had a real love of that craft. And it's a craft that, unfortunately, is becoming rarer and rarer. You know, these days you go to grocery stores and for the most part the meat is sort of cut in really large facilities and quite often not by a human, by a machine instead. And, you know, that's fine. It drives costs down and that's what a lot of people are after. But I do think there's certain occasions that you want, you know, really well cared for meat. And, you know, when you think about a butcher shop, what do you do? Well, of course, you have to source the right animals and then sort of practice that craft, which is the knowledge of how to age an animal, how to butcher and cut the meat to sort of get the right quality results when it comes to the cooking of it. So, yeah, butcher shop was always something that I was really fond of. And I guess in Los Angeles, it's pretty hard to come by that craft. And I think, too, I've made such great relationships with farmers and ranchers through the work we've done at Maud that I sort of just thought there's great ingredients here, but it's hard for people to get them. So I wanted to sort of open something where we sell game and we sell rare breed animals and we dry age meat ourselves. You know, we're dry aging beef up to 120 days and serving it in the restaurant and in the butcher shop. So it's a pretty good, you know, good way to do it, I guess.
Yeah, I understand that the two restaurants are actually named for your two grandmothers. Would you say that the food or the ambiance at each one reflects the grandmother it's named for? Or how did you decide to do that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, the first time I thought about naming the first restaurant, I came up with all sorts of ideas. And the one thing that really stuck with me was Maud. She was a great woman, my granny. She taught me how to play cards and she taught me how to play tennis and she taught me a little bit about food as well. And she used to make this delicious fudge, which was so sweet and fabulous. As an eight-year-old, I'll never forget how good it tasted. So, you know, she introduced me to a lot of cool things and I thought, well, you know, there's something about sitting in a room that means something to you. And there's just, you know, certain rooms you sit in, you feel good in. And I always felt good at my granny's house. So I sort of, in many ways, just sort of picked the name, you know, for personal reasons. But then the more I thought about it, I remember what it was that did feel good. And she used to eat off this, you know, really old English fine china. She was from England, actually. And she had all of this sort of antique-y sort of stuff, vintage, you know, knickknacks and whatnot around her house. So as I sort of started putting more together, I sort of went in that direction and it sort of just became its own thing. And, you know, because it's so small, it's only a 24-seat dining room, you know, you've really got the flexibility to do what most restaurateurs can't because, you know, if you have to buy, if you have to feed 150 people each night, then you probably need a couple of hundred plates, you know. But if you're only feeding 24 or so, then you only need a handful of plates. And I was happy to mix and match stuff. So that's sort of how Maud became what it became. And then with Gwen, I started talking about what we'd named the second restaurant. My brother moved his family over from Melbourne, Australia, to do the restaurant with me. And he said, you know, well, what about our other granny, Gwen? And as we started talking about it, she came off a farm and they raised their own animals and they're actually market gardeners. And it sort of just started to make a whole lot of sense as well. So there we are. We've got Maud and Gwen still in the family.
That's great. Now, before these restaurants happened, before your whole TV career happened, you worked in some really top-notch kitchens in Melbourne and London, including a few of Marco Pierre White's restaurants. Now, he's a legendary chef with a larger-than-life, we can say, public persona. I remember Anthony Bourdain talking about that famous portrait of him with, like, the wild hair and the cigarette dangling out of his mouth and how that just influenced a whole generation of chefs. What do you think you learned from him when it came to entering public life yourself?
Look, it's really interesting because when I worked for Marco, he had nothing at all to do with the media, truthfully. Like, he wouldn't really give an interview. He was never on a television show. He never wanted to be on a television show. He, you know, he only cared about one thing, and that's what he put on a plate. And you know, as one of his guys in the kitchen, you know, our team was also really driven in the same direction. So it's pretty funny that we've ended up on television, because it was we were probably pretty opposed to it, if I'm being really honest. You know, the idea of a celebrity chef was someone that didn't really know how to cook. You know, our life was about Michelin stars, not TV shows. And when I worked for Marco, he worked with an incredible passion, and there was a reason he, you know, won all of the awards. And goodness, I think he was the youngest guy in the world to win 3 Michelin stars. He was the fastest chef in the world to win 3 Michelin stars. And he just worked with this intensity that made you, you know, really proud to be on his team, you know. But it was really difficult at the same time, you know. But I think Marco became famous for all the reasons that, you know, turned us on as young cooks, because he was just a purist and he just wanted everything done perfectly. And there was something about that that was just so so honest and so so down to earth. So, you know, it was, yeah, I worked for Marco for 8 years, and I started off as his commie. I'll pick the lettuce and sweep the floors, and eventually ended up running a couple of his restaurants. So it was, yeah, it was a really nice, interesting journey with him, for sure.
And now you come full circle. How does it feel to be back behind a stove again full time?
I love it. I really do. I thrive on it. I'm not sure. It's really hard to put your finger on. You know, I talk to my wife about it, and I get home at 1 o'clock in the morning, and she's like, why don't you have a cleaner that cleans the stoves at the end of the night? And I'm like, because that's not what chefs do. Chefs clean their own stoves. You know, it's just, there's something in you, I think, when you're sort of brought up in a certain way through a kitchen, you really pride yourself on still being able to work in that same way. So I feel a bit like the granddad of the kitchen, though. All my guys are in their 20s, and here I am in my 40s, but I'm still enjoying it.
That's great. Well, you're clearly not the only one. If you live in LA or are visiting LA anytime soon, start working right now on getting a table at Maud and Gwen. You're clearly really busy these days, Curtis. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Such a pleasure. Lovely chatting to you. Thanks for the time.
And that wraps up another Off-Duty podcast. You can find this and a bundle of other podcasts at wsj.com/podcasts, or go ahead and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever it is you get your audio content. And as always, if you like what you're hearing, tell a friend.